and you're very welcome to Kicking Match. My name is Peter Cinnamond, and this is indeed an Irish League podcast. The league campaign may have ran out of track, but where this episode is going, we don't need roads. As I welcome back Kicking Match OG Michael Clark to review the season that was. We're going to reflect on the predictions we made all the way back in the hazy days of summer 2022, before a ball was kicked and a referee was booed, and ask whose wild ambitions were succeeded and whose dazzling dreams were dashed. Plus, Cruz left the Irish Cup after a scintillating shutdown of Ballymena in the South Belfast sunshine, and we take a brief peek at the European playoffs, which looks set to tie a little bow on this rather fine Irish League campaign. And we have returned to the living room, down from my little bedroom, because just like the last time we got out of the bedroom, I have a guest live in person beside me, because it feels like that end of year party season is upon us. And to do that, it is a delight to welcome back the very first guest on the pod. He was there from the very beginning. Hello, how's your tea? Commentator, Mr. Michael Clark.
Thank you very much for the warm introduction and for welcoming me into your house, Peter. I'm enjoying the decor. I'm just taking it in. We've just sat down. This is all very as it happens.
Straight in. Season's over. We had the Irish Cup on Sunday. May as well jump in there. It was an absolute pleasure to be there and just watch it as a neutral and to reflect on the game. Well, congratulations to Crusaders. Two in a row. That's a very impressive achievement. Obviously, commiserations for Ballymena. That's three times in 4 years you've left without the trophy. First off, what a dominating performance that was from Crusaders.
Incredible. And it was what we all wondered, wasn't it? Because you look at the league table, and even in the build-up, you listen to the managers and the players speak, and Crusaders were trying to play down how strong things looked from their end in comparison to Ballymena United, who have had a really difficult season. Ballymena United were not hiding at all in saying we need a huge performance, but everyone was so encouraged by how they performed against Larne that they thought they just need to do that once more and this actually could be their year. And who wins back-to-back Irish Cups, really? And surely it can't just be a similar final to last year. Well, it wasn't, because last year Crusaders didn't turn up and dramatically got the job done. This year, they turned up and emphatically got the job done.
The early goal went to Crusaders, and to be honest, from about 20 minutes in, it looked like that was going to be the result. Ballymena, they never came out in the first half. They had to thank Jordan Williamson for keeping themselves in it. And then after the second half, the goals started coming in, and it wasn't going to be a case of if they were going to win, it was by how much. Big shout out to that goal from Paul Heatley. I said on Sunday night that it might be a bit hyperbolic to say that's one of the best Irish Cup goals in the final. I thought it was just exquisite.
No, it is. It is. It's one of the best goals in the Irish Cup final easily, I would have thought. And what's amazing about it is he initially thinks, I'll just do a little calm celebration, and then realises, no, screw it, and runs off and does the whole shebang, which he's perfectly entitled to. It was a wonderful goal, something that I heard Colin Coates say. Not surprised to see him do that at all. He does it week in, week out in training sessions, let alone what we've seen him do throughout the Irish League. And one of the great Irish League players produces another great moment on a big occasion. And whilst we're talking about people producing big moments, Philip Lowry, 6 Irish Cup finals, 6 Irish Cup victories, 3 goals in those finals. Talk about a big game player. And that was just, for me, the cherry on the top of the close to perfect season from Philip Lowry. And it isn't like other people who have a really good year. This was just the kind of the exclamation point on an amazing career.
It's funny, a lot of people would suggest that Leroy Miller was the clear runaway favourite for player of the year. I think it shows you how brilliant that season was for Leroy Miller that Philip Lowry isn't getting this award. He can clearly win more. When it comes to Ulster Footballer of the Year, he's still in for that as well with Tomás Cosgrove. But from a midfield performer, he's had the goals, he's been there in the big games, and you have to admit, yes, he's won 6 Irish Cups out of 6 finals, but in his mid-30s now, this is probably his best ever season as an Irish League player.
Like a fine wine. And there's no stopping those Lowry boys. And Stephen, had it not been for injury, I'm sure would have turned in another fine campaign. And hopefully the next season will be that for him. They're an amazing family. I just find myself waxing lyrical about both of them all the time. And I never compare one to the other, but it is so impressive that two brothers could have the careers that both of them have had. And doesn't that just make life easier for the parents? Usually the family have one amazing child and the other one, they just say, we love you both the same. Whereas they actually can just go, wow, both of them are winners.
Spoken like a single child there.
No, I have a younger brother and he's fantastic. But it's an interesting dynamic. But Philip Lawrie has had an amazing season, and the goal return has showed that. I mean, he, even after the final, pointed out he's scored over 100 goals in his career, but this season, I think over 20%. If I do the maths, maybe even closer to 30%. Definitely over 20% of his career goals have been scored in this campaign. That's nuts.
Especially the role he had, that was very much a breaker-upper in that Crusaders midfield. So congratulations to Crusaders. You don't have to go into the playoff. You've got Europe. You can chill. I'm sure you're still partying. But let's also reflect on Ballymena. They were just despondent. I think their fans knew by halftime that it was pretty much all over. And it ends what has been a season without much highlight, without much to cheer about. And we saw somewhat of a mini clear out in January. It's been mooted that we could see more players move on from this team. It's a squad that probably needs a refresh anyway. But are they going to be able to bring in the type of quality there?
I don't envy any of them, to be honest. I think it's a really, really difficult time. They've had so many changes at the club. They've had to try and come to terms with the passing of Dawn Sterling, who did so much there. Long-serving chairman John Taggart steps down and they make the change there. They reshuffle the coaching team underneath the manager. They see key players leave. They're going to see more leave. They actually have quite a crop of talented young players underneath the surface. I just wonder whether they're going to be pushed in a little sooner than maybe some might have imagined because of the finances. And when I say that, I'm simply meaning they've missed out on that European money again. So they don't have the luxury that they would have hoped to have. And they don't have the European football as the kind of carrot to dangle when they're trying to lure people in. So they might need to reevaluate things, and that could point to another couple of difficult seasons. And sorry, Ballymena United fans, I think it's going to be more pain before there's joy there. I do think that, and it's not nice saying that, and I hope I'm wrong. Where are those quick wins coming from? I think they're going to have to invest in the youth and hope that they're good enough initially.
Because without this Irish Cup run and that big performance against Larne, since January, really, since the talk of them cutting their cloth, it has been a really, really difficult couple of months. Up until halfway through the split, it was just a whole load of losses and draws. And like, what you do have with David Jeffrey, if he does stick around, is the experience to try and craft together a team. But that's what he's going to have to do. He's going to have to find these players from somewhere to try and build a team, because the one thing you could tell in that final is they lacked balance, and they lacked, you know, there's a lot of criticisms for the game plan of Ballymena, but I would say really it's the squad that they had. It's not like they had something out wide that could change it. It was trying to go for like, and look, the game plan didn't work out. The players got caught out by a very strong and experienced Crusaders team. And they'll not be the only team that has a big summer ahead of them. For a couple of teams that can't really think about the summer just yet, the season ain't over, we've got the European playoffs, and it's the easier version of it. Two semi-finals being played on Wednesday. We have Glentoran hosting Glenavon, and we have Cliftonville hosting Coleraine. It's funny. I saw a stat there that like fourth place is the most likely place that people come in to win through the playoffs here. You can somewhat argue for any one of these teams having a very strong chance of doing it. If I had to rank them, I'd probably put Coleraine at the bottom just by how well Glenavon are going. To start with the Glentoran-Glenavon game, if you're Glentoran, you get that home advantage if you win through. But the one team you're probably not looking to welcome into the Oval is Glenavon, because not only are they top six killers, they've been very good at doing it to Glentoran this year.
Doesn't that just make it interesting and make it incredibly nervy if you're Glentoran? When you are the seventh place team going into this, what's the risk really? You know, this is, nobody gives you a chance. go and give it a rattle. And best case scenario, European football, oh my goodness, we did it. And if not, just don't disgrace yourselves. Whereas the third place team are expected to win this match, most certainly, because they're playing the lowest ranked team. And Glentoran's fans and their expectation levels are very, very high. They thought they were going to win the league at one point this season. At more than one point this season.
Yes.
So that hasn't happened. They didn't get second either. So now the minimum expectation is to come through this. And as you rightly point out, it's against a team they don't enjoy playing. So how will they manage the pressure? And that will be telling. And even if they do that, they still have another match to overcome. So I wouldn't be incredibly confident if I was Glentoran. But I would think that, you know, if we were to take this Glentoran team seriously in the years ahead, these are the sort of games that they need to step up in. And I'm sure that's what Rodney McAree will be telling them.
I don't want to hype up Glenavon too much because I have seen them the odd time during this run and it hasn't exactly been free-flowing or pretty. But let's put this into context. From Gary Hamilton feeling the pressure from his own fans, he goes into this game at the Oval with a 10-match unbeaten streak. That's confidence. And when you come into this knockout football, that's what you want. At least to give it to Glentoran, they have somewhat found a bit of rhythm and found a bit of form themselves. That is a big, big game. Two teams who have pretty much no form is Cliftonville, who have fallen away dramatically in recent weeks, and Coleraine, whose season somewhat petered out. They're then able to pick up a win on the last game of the season against a, let's say, a unfazed Larne. That's always been a bit of a tasty fixture in regards to what's been on the line every time they face. That's what happens when you have top teams play against each other. But you'd have to admit that just by the chance that the fact is it's solitude, I'm probably favouring the Reds there.
You've got the country's two top goal scorers going against each other in Ronan Hale and Matthew Shevlin, and I think there's only a goal between them. I think Ronan Hale has 29 and Shevlin 28, so who's going to end up the top scorer? Clearly, if you go out at this point, you've lost your chance to add to that tally. So we've seen Matthew Shevlin end his goal drought. Will he have the impetus being the man that's chasing? Because the Golden Boot isn't the league's top scorer. The Football Writers' Golden Boot's the overall top scorer. You know, personal pride there for forwards too. We could see people taking a few extra shots on, potentially, to try and get that coveted prize. It'll be an interesting one. Cliftonville have been hard to read, really, haven't they? They've been quite disappointing.
Possibly.
And Coleraine haven't been wonderful either. But at this point, it is like cup football. It's knockout football, so you can nearly just forget everything we've seen and just go, right, one game. There's one game left in your season. If you don't win this match, that's it done. So go and prove yourselves. I actually have no idea. I really don't have an idea how it's going to fall.
Just because I feel as though I want to put my neck on the line, as there's a bit of this podcast's theme is putting your neck on the line, good or bad. Just because we've seen how the big game players of Crusaders delivered. And yes, every single one of these teams have had their ups and their downs. Who is the team that has the most amount of players that can impact the game and can rise to the occasion with their skill and their ability? They're the team whose the route to Europe is going to have to go through their home patch. It would just be like them to mess it up, but I'm going to say if they can get past Glenavon, massive advantage Glentoran, because they have McGinn, they have lots of players who have found themselves a wee bit in recent weeks, but when the going gets tough, they haven't always got going, but when there's a lot on the line, I feel like they will.
Yeah, it's huge. It is huge for Glentoran. And especially when you look at what type of summer they're going to have, players' contracts coming to an end, will this factor into whether they sign on or whether the club decide to take a different path of things? Glentoran's season will be judged by whether they get European football or not, because it'll be unacceptable to finish third and miss out in Europe and be trophyless.
For another season as well. That's the thing, how much this pressure is starting to mount. Let's do a bit of salacious PR. Let's do a bit of promo for the league. They were able to puff their chest out today and have a good drum of it, as they say that they're able to report another 10% increase on attendances. I think it's been very clear to see, particularly the makeup of the teams in the league, that we have seen a big boost, particularly near the top of the league, of attendances. I think that's definitely got to do with a bit of promotion of the league, I think, drew people in. But look, when you have the rising teams of Lorne, and you can see teams like Cliftonville have really high, they've had a number of sellouts, they have quite a big percentage of how much of the ground they're selling. You've seen quite a lot of big crowds up and down. Nothing encapsulates that more than 1,400 fans going to that big game at Stingmore Park between Portadown and Dungannon. 10% is the number. 360,000 fans across the season. Hey, congratulations to them. The biggest game in the end, do you know what it was? Just around 8,000?
The Big Two Derby, Boxing Day?
Ah, no. Big Two in October.
Ooh.
October. It ended up being an average of 1,587 fans. Technically, actually, the biggest game was the League Cup final. Well, 11,000, yeah. So whatever. Whatever, technicalities.
And then, well, the Irish Cup final, if you're going to start doing that, because it was nearly 10,000.
It was nearly 10,000. So, yeah, well done if you were there. Good job, fan. Right, it's the reason why I've brought you in. I'm here to drag you across the coals or celebrate the brain, the big football brain that you have, Michael. You were the very first guest in this podcast, and as a part of that debut, that maiden voyage of the pod, we went through every single team in a random order, and we talked about how we saw the season unfolding. So I've brought you back. We're going to play a few little snippets of what we thought, as well as review how each team will look back at the season. What were the highs? What were the lows? Were we right? And less importantly, were we wrong?
Can I just say, I have loved this season. That feels like about 5 years ago we did that.
early August.
It's like so long ago.
And that was just like, I might do this podcast, Michael. Do you want to jump in? And you're like, yeah, sure. No worries. So
here we are.
It's May. It's still somewhat rainy outside.
The budget's up. There's cups of tea for guests. My goodness,
we're,
man.
We're live and kicking. and with that, we have clips. Okay, let's get like some of the talking points around the league. First off, congratulations, Lorne. First time champions. Massive year for them. We also had a lot of drama down at the bottom of the league. The chase there. Could Portadown survive? Could they not? They didn't. And on top of that was this hype that, is this the best ever Irish League season of all time? Obviously, it will take maybe a year or so to really understand if we did, but following it as much detail as I have on recording a podcast every week talking about it, it's had plenty of drama and plenty of things to talk about, I'll say that.
Yeah, the only thing you could hold against it, if you want to do that, is that the title race didn't go to the final day, which it has done a few times in recent years. But overall, really competitive league. You know, we were talking about, what, five teams at one stage going for the title up until maybe a month or so before the end. So that was a big plus. Then all the developments at the bottom, people weren't sure, you know, could Newry stay up? Where were Dungannon going to fall into all of this? And Portadown, they somehow got themselves in a position where they nearly did it. And Carrick Rangers, for genuinely the first time in my life, and I say this as a Carrick Rangers fan, not being worried about them being relegated when they're in the top flight. It was a really comfortable season. We're like, we're just beating big teams at home. This is really nice. So, incredible campaign from Stuart King and his team. Granted, the end of the season, you know, the results weren't just as good towards the end, but they'd done the business. They were nowhere near the equation for relegation. And, you know, falling behind Glenavon, but finishing above Ballymena United, it's a real sign of progress for Carrick Rangers. So very, very encouraging.
It was not exactly first times when it comes to this, but something I'll maybe look back upon when it comes to this season is how much we saw the league open up schedule-wise. Yes, we had seen plenty of Friday night games and we had trialed a few Sunday games, but I think if you look back at this season, there was a greater breadth of games. There was always a Friday night game. There was a real commitment from the BBC of showing games. So people were able to watch games and watch other teams, and there would always be this spotlight on the Friday games when maybe someone like yourself was commentating on them. Then you had the Saturday, and then you had some of these big, the odd Sunday game, which some of them were quite dramatic in the end, you know. So that was really interesting to see the league expand, test the waters, and overall, that was a big success as well.
Yeah. If the league is serious about growing, and the people running it are most certainly serious about it, it has to try different things. That doesn't mean those things will be kept. It doesn't mean the old way was broken or bad, but it's important to be open-minded to try and see what works well for people. Part of the thing people complain about on Saturdays is clashes with the amateur football season. Lots of people that would like to go and support a team can't do that, so moving it to Friday night provides that opportunity. Flip side, well, part-time teams having to get out of work and go and play full-time teams, and is that an unfair advantage, and do teams do that on purpose, and all these sorts of conversations. Sunday football, the obvious debate there about why some people, absolutely within their right, don't feel it's for them, and yet the numbers on a number of occasions have proven that there's a big appetite for it. Do we want to see more of that? And opinions will be had there. And I don't actually think that nearly it's an area for debate, because as much as we do debate it, if your convictions are strong against Sunday football, I wouldn't be as arrogant as to presume that I could ever change that, because it's far more important than, well, this is what Michael thinks, so I should listen to him. But if it helps the league grow, then people also have to say, it mightn't be for me, but it seems to be working for them. And you can't begrudge people progress and development, and the league is developing, it's growing, there are more full-time teams, even down to the fact that, you know, Linfield are looking to employ someone to do their social media, which you could laugh at and go, so what? It's a huge area for growth, the digital media, in terms of promotion, and if clubs want to be taken seriously and actually maybe increase their revenue in different ways, being savvy on social media, where maybe we can get things sponsored, maybe we can promote things online, maybe we can attract an audience outside of a match day, maybe we can build a different audience here, maybe we can start creating more content for these people. You need staff to do that, because God bless the volunteers and all they do, but it's a huge, as you know, it's a huge, huge, huge undertaking, and employing people just clearly adds to the professionalism, and maybe eventually we'll see other clubs budget for similar type roles. And I would love more job creation in the Irish League for more people who are enthusiastic to actually work in it. What a lovely thing to aspire towards, that, you know, you could be finishing your university degree and go, I am now working for the team I grew up supporting. How amazing is that? Because in my childhood, unless you were good enough to play for the team you supported, there's no chance you're working for them.
Well, it's good to see clubs put their money where their mouth is. We're now somewhat going to do that. I'm going to play little clips now from Michael. Let's peel it back a wee bit. I've done this. I've taken what is somewhat of a flavour of what we said. If you really want to go back and listen to the very first episode, you can scroll down to the very bottom of the podcast and listen to the two episodes which previewed this season. So I've cut up the clips. This is the first time that Michael is reflecting on the thoughts that we had. It's a bit of me, bit of him. We're not going to go random. We're going to go right to the top. They are the champions. This is what Michael and I thought they were going to do this time, all the way back in August.
They can no longer talk about, oh, we're back, we're in the top flight. They need to now be saying, we are winning things. Here's what we're winning. I think they can be forgiven if they don't win the league, but they cannot be as far off it this season. I'm not convinced that they have added enough quality. And maybe they will be able to gel and prove me wrong. I think Leroy Miller has really impressed everybody in pre-season, and that's no surprise to me.
I think an ideal season would be one of the league. I agree. It feels like it's just a wee bit early for them. And I think Kofi Balmer would be a big loss. He was not a big loss. They had the best defensive record in the league. Sean Want was a brilliant replacement. And hey, Michael Clark was worried about the quality, but he was able to pinpoint your player of the season. Happy with that take, Michael?
I'm actually really pleased with myself, because I would say that the January additions won them the league. They put themselves in a strong position, and I've had this conversation with people from Lorne as well. The mistake they made previously was not strengthening in January, and maybe a little bit too much loyalty, which sounds incredibly cutthroat, but guess what? That's the game. So they brought in good players, made themselves so much stronger. And you look at the January additions, especially Andy Ryan, but Micheál Glynn done very well. Joe Thompson didn't look out of place when he featured, but especially the first two, that was for me the big, big plus, and where no one could get near them, because, well, I'm sure we'll come on to Linfield, but they struggled for goals and in important matches and games against the big teams, whereas we saw Lorne had an answer for everybody they came up against, and that's why they ultimately deserved to win it.
One thing that's not in that clip is how much we were talking about the exodus of Lauren and how we felt as though this might be a tricky season where they're betting all these players in from Want to Miller to Paul O'Neill, because they did say goodbye to some key components with the likes of McDeer. They said goodbye to Hale, who went on and had a brilliant season with Cliftonville, as we all know. But what we've said in this podcast since then and across the season is that sometimes saying goodbye to great players feels like you're weakening your team, but it's like adding that combo connection. It's like sometimes you need to pass on a 8.5 player for an 8.6 player, or find something that just works for you. It's all about team building. It isn't just always about star players. And if there's one thing you would say about Lauren, is that yes, they had these real quality players in Miller, like Ryan, like Bonus, but their real strength was their togetherness and how brilliantly they played as a team.
Well, I said this to Tiernan Lynch. I said, I'm going to completely hold my hands up. I thought you were crazy with some of your transfer business in the summer. And look at what you've done.
Because how easy would it have been to say, we're keeping Hale. We can't bring in that player, because how can we say goodbye to McDade, who also had a strong enough season with Ballymena? That takes a lot of guts to say goodbye to some of your best players.
Lee Lynch, Andy Scott, you can keep going. Yeah. They let go of so many players. So I can say this because it was on, and sorry for the gratuitous plug of the score, but I can say it because it was part of one of our programmes. I had Tomas Cosgrove, who's Lauren's captain, and I said it to him on the programme because, well, you know what I'm like. Very, very direct and open and honest about things. If I'm going to say I don't think something's right, I'll say it publicly. I'll not be behind the doors about it, and I'll always try and be fair to people. And I said to him, I thought you got it wrong. And he said, I think maybe some of the players were a bit worried. I think some of the players were a bit worried when we saw the amount of people leaving. But then when they saw who was coming in and they saw how it was impacting on match days, they're going, well, tell you what, we've found a good recipe here. So it turns out the people in the positions know best. And I said it there, Lauren had to start winning things. It's no good saying, well, we're putting plans in place, we've got these structures. Lee Bonus, the money they spent on Lee Bonus, and whether you want to go, oh, well, it was incremental and it wasn't all in one go or whatever, they put that big amount of money up on a guy who hadn't really got a lot of league goals the previous campaign, and people were saying, Are you mad? What are you doing? How can you justify that? And now he's being touted for going for maybe three times what they paid.
Incredible.
As a league winner. And I hope Lee does get a move. And I'm not trying to upset Lauren fans, but I want to see every player progress. And if he can get a good move for him, then amazing. But you compare that to other clubs that have spent big, and they're going, we still haven't got too many winners' medals off the back of that.
I'm not going to use the L word, that big L word with them, the luck word. But this season, everything went right. There was no huge injuries. They weren't without Miller the same way that other teams have been without Heatley or without McMenamin for long stretches. They somewhat had a healthy enough team. I know they lost Jeff Hughes near the end of the season there, so they were somewhat healthy. And overall, their transfer business was just out of this world. Like, brilliant, even from the January one. So they'll go, we were just right. Our scouting was brilliant. So if they can keep that up, they can keep flying. As I said there, it maybe felt a bit early for them. And I think I probably said that because there wasn't a massive amount of pressure. Yes, they had to improve, and there was pressure on Lynch. We talked about that. He needed to deliver. But delivering was finishing in the top three, you know, having a go at it. And Lauren's ascension this year, they just galloped through it, because for every stride, the fans were like, this is brilliant. Just keep going. Don't worry about it. It's all good. While the fans of the Blues, fans of the Glens, of the Reds were like, you got to keep going, or this isn't good enough, you need to improve. Lauren was able to go, this win of the title, Lark's great crack. Next season, I don't know if that's going to be the same thing. I think they'll still be forgiven, but with success comes expectancy, and it's going to be a different world. Once you've won it once, yeah, it's a different world now.
I mean, I say this under advisement, but I went to their Academy of Sport, and I hadn't been since it was officially reopened and relaunched, you know, still the Cliff and old money. But I went and recorded a programme there. I got a tour of the place. I got to see some of the academy kids and what they were doing in the classroom, some of the training sessions that were going on, the areas the players could hang out, and chef there preparing their lunchtime after their morning session, and it felt like a big club. And I would imagine if you're a player being brought in and given the treatment, you know, do you want to join us? Let's give you a wee tour. You'd be so impressed, because it just feels like a big club. And I'm not saying that, you know, a Linfield couldn't put on that type of show, or Glentoran round a historic round or anything like that, but Larne couldn't have done that up until recently, and now they can. Whether that translates on the pitch and continues to translate, fine, that's the test, and that's the test that any big team will be held to. But I was walking around going, my goodness, doesn't this feel different? And you go into reception and the Gibson Cup sitting there. Don't mess it up, guys. You know, so Linfield will have the fire in their belly next season. It's not going to be, we're not handing the trophy to Larne now and packing up shop for a whole 12 months or anything like that. But I'm, as much as I'm really, really looking forward to a little break, I am nearly as excited for what comes next.
Oh, it's an exciting chapter. Congratulations, Larne. Enjoy it. We will speculate on your future as the weeks and months go by. Second place, they didn't do five in a row. We'll say this was all done before RFS gate. This is what we thought about Linfield going into the season.
I don't think the problem with Linfield this season will be their goals. The draws is an issue. There's no doubt about that. They need to be more ruthless.
I think a bad season is anything but winning the league. Second place, I think, is a bad season and a disaster for this team. That's a lot of pressure, but I think they know that. Second place was a bad season, Michael, and it felt as though this season never really got going. RFS happened, there was the hangover, they then had a couple of games to play catch up, they lost multiple penalty shootouts, yes they have the League Cup, yes they got second eventually, and you know what, they did get goals. However, it never really came together when it comes to particularly against the top six. Their record against the bottom six, it was dominant as ever. Linfield wanted this season to end probably weeks ago and want to start over. Is David Healy going to be the man that facilitates that? Looks like it could be. But let's not try and put roses amongst this for Linfield. This was a bad season. Probably looks better when it comes to the table, but living through it, wasn't one that was filled with joy and excitement.
No, and fans are complaining about the style of football and the approach to big games, and maybe a sense of, was there nearly an element of fear in this Linfield team and not the same confidence or swagger as years gone by? It shows you the standard that they're held to when finishing second, winning the League Cup and missing out on European group stages by a penalty shootout is abject failure. Where does that put the rest of us? And the other thing I would add to that is, there's always this contradiction in terms with how we talk about Linfield and then the league, because we say year on year, the league's getting better and better and better and better and better. And then you'll hear people lampoon Linfield as rubbish. Well, they win it most of the time. So is the league better or not? So it's a strange one. Surely if the league gets better, that means teams like Linfield will find it harder to in the future win the league. So that means they're not going to look as impressive because other teams will have, in areas, closed those gaps. Now, if you're Linfield, that's not good enough. You can't just sit back and go, oh, fair enough, Michael, you know, you're right there. Yeah, that is how it happens. You need to recruit better. And they'll probably say have a bit more luck. Big players, multiple big players out injured throughout the season. And I'm not creating excuses for them because they also have squad depth. But when you're trying to win a title, it just felt like they could never get the right combination. And yeah, it was a weird, weird season where there were multiple games where I watched them and they didn't feel like they had that belief in themselves, and I don't really know why that was. The European hangover was definitely a thing. They've spoken about it themselves. I don't know how sympathetic I am in the sense that, right, it happened, but get over it. You know, try and kick on. They did win the League Cup. They didn't, you know, completely fall away. The league wasn't 1 month in advance or anything like that, but can you afford to be on such a bad run for so long? If I'm being highly critical, that there's, you know, a fair question to be asked there. But, you know, the big thing people will talk about as a failure is when it comes to the transfer window and they go, right, we need big game players here. Let's bring in Kyle Lafferty. And it didn't work.
Yeah, a lot didn't work. And they perhaps didn't refresh a team that we saw somewhat of the warnings of this from January last year. We talked about the draws in that podcast, and they somewhat dealt with them when it comes to maybe bottom six sides. They didn't deal with them when it came to the top six sides. And perhaps being behind the eight ball meant, even earlier in the season when they're going away to Coleraine or they're having to go to Seaview, they didn't have that killer instinct. They're like, right, we just can't get further behind here. We need to try and consolidate. And they just didn't turn up in those big games, didn't have either the luck or the big time player. You talked about the injuries. Fallon's the big one at the top of that list. They're without Shields for a long time.
Gallagher had timeout.
Yeah, and then up front, they had this mix where Vertanen had a great run, but only seemed to be scoring against the bottom six. The McDade experiment kept going and going and going.
Then he got injured.
He got injured. Lafferty came in. That didn't work. McKee had a time there, and that was great. While other teams were settled, Linfield seemed to be tinkering a lot. And when you have those blows in a penalty shootout, it was tough to come from. And look, when you're planning your team and you're planning your recruitment, we talk about how much the RFS thing and not getting into the group stages of the Europa Conference League impacted the players. But how much did it impact the team? How many people were still trying to maneuver at that point? You know, we recorded that in early August. Could there have been some players in the pipeline where it's like, ooh, would have loved to join, guys, but maybe next time. So, you know, maybe they were dealing with not exactly the team they had built. This is, like I say, a bit of a diff on the nose. They'll come back stronger, at least Linfield fans will hope for. They'll come back hungrier. They have not got a perfect score, and they'll be back next year knowing that this year was not a good one. Right, this is a fun team this year. Glentoran, third place. I think they've got a real chance. Real, real chance. But I can see why, because of just that hot and cold nature of some of these players, why there's such a vast opinion on what the outcome could be.
And there's a vast opinion that. Because they're massive. It's Glentoran. They are massive. The pressure, the scrutiny will all be on the management. Can they figure it out and get it to click, gel, and work fast? There's no patience here, I don't think. They start away to learn. They have a home game against Crusaders before they play Dungannon Swifts.
Massive games.
Massive games. And people will be watching from the off to see if they are going to live up to the quality. The squad is a really good squad. For me, they're not favourites going into it. And I can say that. But they haven't earned the right to be favourites based on how they finished last season.
The question was, Michael, were Glentoran going to Glentoran? And by Jove, did they Glentoran this season. They raced out of the traps. One of the most exciting Irish League spells for a team, I think, ever. People thought they were going to win the league by Christmas. It was electric. And then, as you somewhat suggested there, the pressure was going to be on the manager. It did end up being on the manager. It ended up being a change. That's where all the focus was in the end. And they somewhat got themselves together by the end of the season. But it's another season, and like pending this European playoff result, it's another season where Glentoran were their own worst and best enemy.
Well, they nearly convinced me that everything I said there was going to be folly. They nearly convinced me, but it ended up kind of coming back to be true anyway. The patience would eventually run out when the results disappeared. And I mean, the semi-final defeat against Linfield, they were atrocious. They were so poor. And things just fell to pieces rather spectacularly or desperately, depending on how much you enjoyed watching all of that. And they, in the end, made the change. Mick McDermott, what would we say, fell on his sword. In came Rodney. He was able to get a few good results. And in the end, a bit of gloss on the way they finished the season somewhat. You know, third's not awful from how bad it was looking at one stage. But as I'll continue to say, the expectation's still there and they have to get European football. Otherwise, there'll be more unhappy supporters come the end of it all.
This season, particularly from about February onwards, has felt like a really long pre-season for next year. While Lafferty did not work out, Niall McGinn did. And also, we saw Terry Devlin work Now, perhaps he's not going to be there next season, but they're starting to get, when so many people have had a bit of a side eye at this Glentoran transfer activity where it's felt a wee bit bloated, and there's been a lot more disappointments than massive successes. I think there was some big successes there and something to build on. Roddy McAree was able to pull this team out of the doldrums and play some exciting football. It all comes a wee bit too little too late, and they'll have a chance of getting European football. If it comes, brilliant. Another team with a lot of work to do during the summer. But they have brilliant players. It doesn't look as though McMenamin's also going to be about next year. So they have plenty of work to do. But when they have the spine of a brilliant league-winning team, because they pretty much were a league-winning team for about 12 games. They looked unstoppable. We all know the story. They weren't in the end. And in a couple of months' time, once me, you, everybody else is previewing next season, it doesn't matter if they sign Cristiano Ronaldo. Everyone's going to say, Glentoran need to show that they consistently can do it, and they can do it without the drama. They can put the drama behind, because it's a bit like Lorne, but in a different way, where the before anybody can say they can do it, they're going to have to prove it to us that they can, because they have the players. They had the players this season, but they couldn't deal with it.
Individually, they have enough good performances over the course of the season that people are saying how many of those players will still be there next season. So that is an indicator that it wasn't a total disaster, but collectively at times they went missing, and there was a period of the season where something went badly wrong and it ended up in a change of manager. So that points to it itself. But you mentioned Terry Devlin. Outstanding season. Really, really impressed by Terry. He has been magnificent. It's no wonder he's being linked. I think we've seen the progression with Aaron Whiteman, and he continues to grow into a very capable young player with an exciting future ahead of him. Bobby Burns proved that he's not this Mr. Versatile that kind of gets tacked on to him as if Bobby's strength is that he can play multiple positions. He came into his own and scored some really big goals this season and ended up being their player of the year. So he proved that he has the ability, he has the talent, and having come back from such a terrible injury as he had, wasn't that long ago that he snapped his leg, to now be, you know, star turn for one of the biggest teams in the country. Fair play to Bobby.
A team he's looking forward to next season, I imagine. Right, after running Linfield so close the season prior, what do we think Cliftonville were going to do this year? This season coming up feels like it could be Paddy McLaughlin's difficult second album. Cliftonville played out of their skin last year. They came as close as you possibly could without getting over the line. Is coming so close going to deflate them after such a big season? Or is that fire going to be burning even hotter and even more to get that title, knowing that a goal or two here or there would have had them praying around with the Gibson Cup last year?
You'd be foolish to say that you don't expect them to come back strong again this year, and at the very least, give it a good rattle.
I'm going to give us a massive pat on the back there. It absolutely was a difficult second year. It wasn't for the first couple of months. They did run it close, but as we talked about, a change for Glentoran was because of their poor run. You can somewhat now reflect upon where Cliftonville started to fall off the wagon. Yes, it's those two defeats at home to Dungannon. But if you were to do a bit of, if you're looking for the hindsight, you're probably saying that's maybe where the Paddy McLaughlin relationship with the club started to lessen and fade away. Very disappointing end of the season. They can still rectify it, but they completely ran out of gas at the end of the day after pumping it strong for almost two seasons.
Yeah, punched above their weight last year, came so close to winning the thing, and were pretty good for a large portion of this season, but then it was as if they just finally ran out of steam and then really couldn't keep up at all. And, you know, it was sort of watching a marathon, and someone from being in and around whilst the other sprinters pick up the pace for that final lap, they're going, oh, no, I'm falling down the pecking order here. Ain't happening for me, chief. And they felt it in their legs. So that, I don't know whether it was something going on behind the scenes is what caused what we saw on the pitch, but their season fell apart quite quickly. And then from talking about them being in the race, it was, well, how much further are they going to fall? And we've seen, obviously, Paddy McLaughlin, unlike the last time he had the call from Derry City, this time said, do you know what, actually, I think I will say yes, and I think I will make that return home and join Rory Higgins' coaching team. So, time of change for Cliftonville.
It feels like a fulcrum moment here where whoever steps into that role could define not only the short-term but medium-term future of this club, because they have a lot of great players there, a lot of great players who probably don't have a lot long left in their career. Whoever comes in and whatever business they do during the summer, they've got a window. You talk about windows with teams, they've got a window and they've got to strike now, or this team, who was 1 point away last season and were far off this season when it all comes down to it, could fade away and we're talking about a rebuild again.
And, you know, are we waiting to find out how they fare in Europe before they make any announcement as well, or potential candidates waiting to see whether there's European football before they make a decision? That's something to bear in mind as well. I mean, if Deki O'Hara leads them to Europe, that'd be some achievement for him. You know, he's been there as a player. I know he's been there as part of the coaching staff, but considering what's happened and the fact that he's had to step into the breach and try and steer them through this messy period where they've been quite poor, and, you know, before Paddy McLaughlin left, Declan O'Hara was doing a lot more of the interviews, and I think a few people were going, hold on here, what's going on? So, you know, if he was to do that, wouldn't that be some achievement? And I wonder, would he be saying, got a taste for this now, any chance, guys? But this is an important period for Cliftonville. European football, obviously, the finances that could bring, they need to perform on the pitch, but they also need to get the appointment right as well, because they've done so well in recent years. They don't want to all of a sudden now lose all that good momentum.
We stay in North Belfast. How do we think the Crews are going to do?
They're one or two signings away from properly challenging to win the title. But they did lose 12 times last season in the league. And that's absolutely unforgivable if you're a team like Crusaders. So that can't happen again. They finished, 15 points off Linfield in the end, if my mental arithmetic's right. So they were a long way behind them, and they have a few things to address.
16 points in the end, they were far away. And in the end, they didn't get those one or two signings. They probably could have done with them. It'll be an interesting summer for them, mainly because it felt as though they skipped that transfer window, really.
And they'd Paul Heatley out for 7 games and Ben Kennedy out for most of the season. So it went from, look, there are a couple of big signings away from kicking on to just take the star players out there and see how you fare, lads. So they did what they seemed to be able to do quite frequently under Stephen Baxter. Just go win the Irish Cup. Handy enough, boys. So more European football for them.
A successful season. I think their home record was absolutely outstanding. I don't think that's an opinion, that's a fact. It was outstanding. And they go into next season probably with a similar team, but I would advise them to start getting a few more bodies, a few more younger players, because I don't know if we're going to be sitting here in 3 years talking about a Paul Heatley screamer in the Irish Cup final.
Has Declan Cadell retired yet?
Come back again. I'm surprised we actually talked in that episode. Like, oh, how will they do? How will they deal without Declan Cadell? The answer is just have Declan Cadell.
I mean, that for me is one of the stories of the season, if not the story of the season. I was at Windsor Park the night where he was on the team sheet. And I remember asking Michael Long from Crusaders, the media officer, was this a misprint? He said, no, we had him registered all the time. We just never thought we would use him. And we've sort of had to, you know, unleash him here. So he ends up coming off the bench, gets booked almost immediately with a horrible tackle, and you go, he's back, lads. That's Declan. He's back. But, you know, you're going, how fit's he going to be? How much is he going to be able to play? What's he going to be able to do? He ends up scoring the goal that wins the semi-final and gets him to the final, and, you know, he's posting pictures of his kid on the pitch afterwards with his winner's trophy and holding the cup, and you're going, that's amazing. Most people don't get another chance to do that. And he could have easily come out of retirement, had a season where they finished, or fifth, won nothing, and went, what did I do that for? He somehow managed to be in, you know, another Irish Cup winning side. Credit to everybody involved in that. And, I mean, still don't think it was right that Billy Joe Burns wasn't allowed to play. I still can't get my head around that. But put that aside, Declan, are you going to go again? I can't wait to find out.
All this was done in August, as we've said. One of the most hyped up teams in August was Coleraine. This is how we thought it was going to go down. I think if you look back at this time next year and they got in the top three, I think that'd be a brilliant season for this team. Difficult season is probably slipping out of that top six, and they're not guaranteed to be in it, I think, this year. But if a bad season is being on the other end of that dotted line,
I don't mind making a call on it. I think they will make the top six okay, and they should be also looking at cup competitions and saying, can we get our hands on one of these? And I'm not to be disparaging to the North West Cup, but I'm talking about the League Cup or the Irish Cup there.
Oh, so close to a League Cup. I feel as though that would have given a bit more of a polish to this season. They did have a good start to the season, but it all petered out. Yes, they didn't slip out of the top six. They never threatened of falling out of the top six, but this will feel like a season of missed opportunities, I'd say.
They didn't show up in the League Cup final, and that, when all is said and done, will really, really annoy everybody. You know, they must look at that and go, what happened? What happened? And I'm not taking anything away from Linfield, obviously. But you want to show up and give a good account of yourself. And I didn't feel like Corian did that at all. And they've said that, so they know it. They still have the European playoffs. It's the caveat to all this conversation, isn't it? Because you're going, yeah, well, it wasn't great, but my gut instinct is that they're not going to make Europe. They are sixth because they're the sixth best team. And the difference is, as we've talked about, Glenavon have had a run of form. The manager of the month, the player of the month, both from Glenavon. Corian, it's been a difficult season for them. They've been disappointing, and they've struggled to kind of put any great run together.
You're right, because you sit there and go, it's not goals that they're missing, because they have one of the top goal scorers in the league. He isn't as a complete footballer as maybe other strikers. Was it defensively? Not really. And patches, yes, but they also had a very strong patch where they didn't concede, or had like 8 clean sheets out of 10. So they can do that then. It's maybe just sewing that all together. It's somewhat this year was the same problem they had last year. They can compete with the top six, but they're not winning enough of them. And this season was about bringing more bodies in. Perhaps they will have bedded in proper to have it another go next year, but they need to turn up in these big games, because too many times did they either draw it or just lose. They need to win more of them, and maybe they'll have a stronger chance. Glenavon.
Anybody that I'm talking about finishing 7th and 8th isn't because they're rubbish. It's just simply because the quality in the league is that good now. A few years ago, it would have been an insult to be looked at as not making the top half, but I think now we just realise that there's 8 teams fighting for 6 places.
I think if we're looking at aims for this season, it's to get into the top 6 to guarantee your participation in this playoff system. A good season would be them in the top 6. They'll take 7th. Probably, but they'd want to push on. There's experienced players you'll want who are going to be motivated. Gary gets his teams motivated, and there's young players in there who could just spark. There's always, every season, there's a player that pops up out of nowhere at Glenavon and is just one of the next big players in the league, and I think they could do with one of them right now. Are we classifying Isaac Bird as me being right here? Probably didn't end up being one of the best players in the league, but maybe him, Jimmy Doran, was some of these young pups who came out of the Glenavon youth system and became big players, or from the bench and become decent big players for them. It's really strange looking back at Glenavon, because when they were poor and when they were bad, they were bad, and their fans really, really felt it. But they were great against the top six, and were in the top six if you just have a league for teams playing teams in the top six. They were great in the big games, but they get 7th. That's a good season, right? But I feel like Glenavon fans feel as though that was all right.
It's what I said there. It's just so hard to be in the top six. That's all it is, and it's soul-destroying, because they'll go, well, a few seasons ago we were pushing for the title, and yeah, but do you have that same squad in comparison to who you're against? Look at some of those players and who they're playing for now. So that's the difficulty that they're in. It wasn't a wonderful season, because, you know, on the face of it, there's plenty of matches they didn't win. So it's hard to come away and go, wow, we were fantastic. They didn't push, you know, all the way through the cups like they might have hoped to do. So if they end up on European football, they'll be doing cartwheels. I think they've had an all right season. I don't think they've been spectacular. They certainly haven't been atrocious, because they finished, in my own head, exactly where I placed them. probably if you're a Glenavon fan and you're watching through the prism of hope and dreams and aspirations, you're going, this isn't good enough, we're not doing enough, we're not kicking on. And maybe that's fair enough. But in terms of having seen enough of them, having seen what they have, I'm not saying they're not a good team, but they're where they are. That's what I expected of them, and that's where they finished.
It's funny, they're like the bottom half version of Crusaders. A lot of experience and delivered in big games and won some really famous games as well against tough opposition. And then the next week they go and draw or lose against Dungannon or Portadown or something like that. So they will take positives from the big wins and hope, with a few little tweaks here or there, if they can eradicate the mistakes, then they'll be feeling a lot better next season.
One thing I would just say is, if you're Glenavon, you're going, why on the name of goodness can we give big teams a game and struggle against the teams in the bottom half?
Yeah, but that's, what do you think is the harder thing to do? All of a sudden start beating Glentoran away, or not lose to Portadown away? You know, it's you'll hope that's easier to fix than the other. They'll just hope that they can still repeat that next year. They were sniffing around seventh place for so much of the season, but did we think it was going to happen for Carrick Rangers? I think a great season would be last season without the slump, if I'm being honest. If they could do that without that slump, and they're never closer than 7 points from 11th, well, what a brilliant season that would be for the Amber Army.
You're can making they do me it? Nervous.
I think they can, compared to the people around them. I don't think they're the weakest team in the league, but I think they could be caught. They could fill a slot like the Portadown Warren Point thing. I think it could be one of those teams. I think they can push on. Can't Curtis Allen do it? Is Cushley going to be the same player making the difference again? And how does Jim Irvin fare? Lots of questions. And the answer to all three of those was yes, yes, and he did pretty good last season. I would like to claim that I was right on the whole there. I did caveat saying, I believe they can have this great season, which they did, or they can also pretty much be relegated. So I was riding two horses there, but I don't think many people were predicting the type of season that Carrick had. They had the great run at the start, but no one was giving them a huge amount of credit because we had saw this movie before. But they didn't fall away. They kept going. They had plenty of big scalps against top teams. Who can forget that big summer scalp against Linfield off the back of RFS, one of the biggest victories of Taylor's Avenue, maybe? You'd know more than I would, but this, on the whole, must have been a brilliant season if you're a Carrick Rangers fan.
Super season. Lots to be pleased with going into the final days. Not really that bothered with what happens. How lovely. What a luxury. What's this? Normally, it's nail-biting. Even the season before was, is it relegation? Will we do enough? Could this be playoffs? What's going to happen? There was none of that this time. Curtis Allen did very well. 7 goals in 13 games. If he hadn't been injured,
as a percentage, that's incredible, isn't it?
It's phenomenal. And we all know how good Curtis Allen is. I didn't think he was going to do those numbers.
No.
So if he hadn't got injured, what a season we could be talking about. Because at the beginning of this league season, the first couple of months, he's one of the top scorers in the league, which seems remarkable. You know, we're talking about a man in his mid-30s, sorry, Curtis, who is having this renaissance period at Carrick Rangers. And just felt so cruel, that injury. But even if you look at the business that they did, bringing in Nedis Makulatis, and people are going, oh, it's one thing being good in the championship, how will he make that step up? 4 goals in, well, I think 16 games. I don't think that's a bad return at all, being fitted into that team, stepping up into the league. So, you know, he had a good season. And McGuckin got half a dozen goals. Cushley, I think 7. Lloyd Anderson got a bag full. So there was goals around the place, which is so important and not something, again, that teams in the lower half can often point to. Certainly Ballymena United weren't able to offer that up with the same amount of regularity. So clever recruitment. Most of the time, a sturdy enough, reliable team. You know, there was a couple of matches where you're going, my goodness, this was a walloping. But at home, could give the big boys a fright, if not take points off them. And that shows a team with a bit of belief. And that is where I do believe the experience that was added really paid dividends.
I think they took a massive step forward reputationally around the league. I think for a lot of people, they will now see Carrick. They can easily be brought down a peg. But I think around the league, people go, This Carrick team is a serious team, and King has been able to show that he showed his stripes. He is a Premiership manager, and he's been able to deliver on numerous occasions. And this is a team who, a bit like Lauren, has recruited really well. The players with experience have, on the whole, done very well for them. And, like, is that the first time, was it, King was talking about 40 points for them in the top flight? Like, that's an excellent achievement.
And we lose track of these things at times too, don't we? Because we all get so carried away with who's going to win the league and who's going down that we fail to see at times individual achievements. And even just that sentence that you said there, I think, I don't know if I've actually heard anybody say that, Stuart King is a Premiership quality manager. Yes, he is. Absolutely is. Was nominated for Manager of the Year. So that shows you the campaign that he's had. And as I say, Carrick Rangers fans were sitting with their pipe and slippers the last couple of games and relaxation going, be nice to win, but who really gives a stuff? We're staying here and let's build in the summer and kick on in the next campaign. And what a lovely luxury to be able to enjoy. So well done, Mr. King.
Absolutely. And he clearly wants more off the back of this. He was not pleased by his team's performance, even when you're pretty much home and hosed in the league. He was so disappointed after that result against Portadown, saying, oh, we've wrecked our chance to potentially get seventh place.
Oh, he's not laid back.
No, that's one word not to say. So there's a lot of teams who feel disappointment. I think for Carrick, you got to say congratulations, and I'm sure he's had a great time enjoying it.
Yeah, but I mean, and that's the thing as well, you know, because I don't want to patronise or anything. Managers aren't going to go, oh, well, that'll do. That's fine. That's not how he's going to view it. And I know that the Glenavon game at home, they were looking at it and saying they felt they should have had a penalty. They didn't play very well. They were losing by a goal. They could have had a penalty to be the equalising goal in the game. They end up conceding another one. And after the match, he's going to find the referee and ask what on earth's going on. In a match which was realistically inconsequential to the season because of where we were, you know, mathematically nothing was going to change. But that's the professional pride, and that's the standards, and that's what managers, good managers, do for their team. It's, hey, we're not resting on our laurels. That the fans are happy, that's great. That changes quickly, so let's keep on trucking.
Look, we've had a lot of wins here. I think this next one may be a bit of a swing and a miss. I think, looking at it, I rate Ballymena as my dark horse this year. Not to potentially go all the way, but what I saw for them last year, they're a big, broad team. They're physically strong. They've got veteran players within that squad, and they have a manager in David Jeffrey who has been there and done that. They brought in McDade. He bangs in goals wherever he goes. And they also have Paul McElroy, you know, couldn't get out of the team because he kept scoring goals. They've got a lot up front. Big thing for me is, are they a glass cannon? Like that 3-3 we were talking about, it wasn't getting the goals. They had the spirit to get the goals in that game. That's why I think if they get in a nice run, they could safely be in the top six. A lot to unpack there. Michael, I think after being able to...
I don't remember agreeing with you there.
No, I know you didn't. I think reflecting on that idea and being able to just sit with it for a while, I think I forgot some key things there. And I think I forgot that they were going to go into the season without Miller and Jude Winchester. And that's a big thing to potentially forget. I perhaps was right. Well, no, I wasn't right, because I thought their big strength was going to be scoring loads of goals and their weakness would be conceding lots. In the end, that wasn't their problem. No. They didn't concede a whole lot. Even they had that awful run from January, it was a lot of 1-0s. Their problem was scoring goals. We talked about Paul McElroy there. He was pretty much removed from the team. He didn't get into the team and then was moved on to Portadown in January, where he scored a bugger load of goals. Dave McDade was this kind of lone striker. Jordan Gibson didn't give them, not that scoring loads of goals is a massive part of his game, but he didn't get a load of goals. Parkhouse was moved on. You lost Keeley. We ended up seeing that their real Achilles heel was they had very little width, or their width was coming from deep. They're coming from wingbacks and McCulloch or Redmond, or trying to fashion in other players as wingbacks. It just never really got going. It wasn't the right mix. They had their own issues. And as much as I feel as though what I thought I was saying was based on fact and what I'd saw I was right, I was very much wrong here.
You can't win them all, Peter. Don't be so hard on yourself. I can understand to a point why you thought, look, Ballymena maybe be able to produce something. They did get to an Irish Cup final again, so had they have won that, maybe you'd have felt a bit better sitting here listening back to that clip. But, you know, most of their players that did score goals got 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So that was not helpful for them whatsoever. They looked really disjointed. I saw them quite early on in the season in a home game when they were beaten by Carrick Rangers. And I remember at that stage after the game saying, my goodness, you were brutal today, to a couple of the people behind the scenes. Yeah. Really, really poor. Surprisingly poor. And they were like, yeah. Mm. And to me, that was just that sort of season where that happened more often than not. And I take no pleasure in saying that. Now, we did see the odd game, and they seemed to keep happening at Seaview, where on a Sky match, they beat Crusaders at Seaview when practically nobody was doing that. And they went there and won an Irish Cup semi-final against the best team in the country this season. So maybe they need to relocate, I don't know. So, they can do it occasionally, but they could not do it with any regularity. And it was an incredibly disappointing season for Ballymena United.
And it's hard to really see where they take this team, because it's been reported that their captain Kelly is moving on to Glentoran potentially. How many of the players will stick around? So we'll have to sit here in August and see how it's sitting. Perhaps a bit of a refresh is what they needed, but building on what they had the season before, they didn't. It didn't progress. They regress. And nothing sums up that more quite like an Irish Cup final, which they lose at the last minute the season before. And then politely, they got thumped the next year. A lot to work on, Ballymena. Right, the new boys. What do we think they would do? They have firepower up front. I worry about them at the back. And I think that's why they didn't walk that championship. They were caught out a wee bit too much at the back. And I think it will just be about how many goals they can score against the other teams. But like last year, can they beat the other teams around them? I think they can. Best case, I could see them doing a Balde-Mallard and scaring people near 7th and 8th. I have a good feeling about Newry if I was a Newry fan. I think they'll enjoy their run no matter what. It looked as though they could have scared people. They had a very good start. And if you look back at the goals they conceded 71, which seems high, but is still less than what Carrick conceded, less than Dungannon and Portadown. But to be honest, me and you probably would have conceded less this season than those two teams. And they did score a decent amount of goals. 37 goals is still more than Dungannon and Portadown. And when you're at the bottom, ultimately, as I said in that clip, you just have to do better than the teams around you. And they showed up against Portadown twice. They end up getting 9 points from their games against them. We all know where one of those 3 points came from. And if it wasn't for a last-minute flurry, they maybe could have got all 12. Newry did have exciting players up front. Oh my goodness, I just love John McGovern. He has strength, he has power, he has determination, he's athletic, and can get into the box at the right time to score goals. James Thielen doesn't have a whole lot of size, but look, he almost scored 10 goals and really delivered near the end of the season. That's the type of player which I think a lot of teams in the bottom half would be screaming out for.
Can I just say James Thielen did get 10 goals?
He did get 10 goals.
He got there.
Final end.
Because James Thielen would absolutely have somebody point that out to you. He's so competitive.
So, you know, and he was a really, really key player. One of their weaknesses was clearly in the wing back position. You could see some of those top teams where that was an area where they could get at them. Long distance goals was something they saw a lot, unfortunately, against them. A few of them were absolute corkers, but they would like to stop that next year. They go into next season with a brand new manager, Darren Mullen, standing down. It's assistant Gary Boyle who stepped up. Big season for him. They did what they wanted to do. They stayed up. Congratulations to them. They didn't have a great run, particularly from November, but they snapped out of it. And look, they're playing Premiership football next year. That was the aim at the start of the season, and they did it.
Let's see in time, will he make changes from Darren Mullen, or is this very much just about keep or lit? You know, keep going. Can we just mention Darren Mullen? 10 years, what a job he has done. 14 years as part of the coaching staff, being one of the people that brought them back from being gone and brought this team up from the Middlesbrough Intermediate League B all the way up, all those promotions to the Premiership via the playoffs, relegation, back again as champions and safety. It's an amazing job that he's done, and it's no surprise to me why so many managers speak so highly of him, and maybe with a little bit of time out, because, you know, we forget this as, you know, these are real people with families and other things in their lives to contend with. It takes so much out of you. He's put his heart and soul into it, and managing, you know, a team like Newry City, who don't have massive resources through a period like COVID as well, and the challenges that clubs outside of the top flight would have had at that time with their squads and everything. So, so difficult. But kudos to Darren Mullen for an absolutely tremendous decade, and one that he can be so, so proud of.
We go to 11th, and a team who we don't know if they will 100% be playing top flight football next year. How do we think the season was going to pan out all the way back last summer? This is a Premiership team from front to back. It's just about, can they live up to the sum of their parts?
And can they stop conceding an absolutely heinous amount of goals?
Goals.
Because 86 goals conceded last season. I mean, they're never boring. Let's give them that. They are never boring. There were matches where I watched Dungannon Swifts, and they played like a team that wanted to win 3-2 at 0-0, you know?
Yeah.
And you were thinking, at times, how have they not scored? There were matches where you watched them and it felt like they threw the kitchen sink and even it would hit the crossbar. And it was probably a frustrating thing for them on occasions that they didn't have maybe just that killer instinct that would have helped things be a bit more comfortable.
So much has changed, yet so little has changed. You'll be delighted to know they only conceded 84 goals this season. So that's somewhat of an improvement there. The whole trying to knock the ball in at the top, killer instinct up in the striking department. Not so much.
No.
But by the end of the season, and we've potentially got a playoff still to go for them, they've somewhat got away with it this season.
Difficult, you know, heinous amount of goals. I didn't mince my words there. It was kind of similar again this year. The thing that frustrates me a wee bit about Dungannon Swifts is I went and covered their Irish Cup game at Solitude, and they were so good against Cliftonville and deserved to knock them out of the cup. And then they replicated in the league a couple of weeks later. And you're going, why can't you set up like this? Why can't you produce that more frequently? Now, the interesting thing for me was that, you know, the pressure off, final game of the season, Stanmore Park, they basically bring out the after schools club and say, go on, 16, 17 year olds, go and have a wee game there, kids. Seven outfield players make their debut. Their goalkeeper makes his league debut for them. Congratulations to all those players. Lovely milestones for them. You look at it, and I know the old football isn't played on paper, but you look at it and you think, well, there's only one way this game's going. Darren Mullen's hurrah is obviously going to be a Newry City win against the Toddlers. But they played actually pretty well, Dungannon Swifts, and they got their win. So what am I saying there? There is signs that there's something to build on. There is a good team in there. It would be a shame to lose them from the Premiership, but in recent seasons, they need to really wake up and make changes if they want to be a Premiership team. If they survive now against, whether it be Warren Point Town, whether it be Anna United, presuming the playoff goes ahead, which I'm assuming at this stage it will, if they stay up, they need to make changes, because they have not really stayed in the league with great gusto. They found it tough, and this season is a little bit by the skin of their teeth.
Yeah, the thing for me was always this playing out from defence. It looks great when it works, but the amount of times I was sat there ready to report a goal for the radio, and I'm starting it off with, and Dungannon lose it while coming out from the back. And this game is tough enough without gifting other teams goals like that. I know to a certain extent you have to work through some tactics, you have to work through the kinks and trying to learn a style of play, but time and time again it was a mistake like that which put them in a position where if things don't go the way they did at Stanmore Park, the second last game, they could be the ones completely out of the league. They do somewhat get away with it because Portadown were so poor this year. And I think striker is going to be an area of concern this summer. That's regardless of if they keep Rhys Campbell or not. Where those players come from? Well, that's the million dollar question. It's the 100 grand question at the minute for most teams, because pretty much every team down at that bottom part of the table has struggled. So defensively, they have got players like Marin, but I just don't know it. I'm on paper, funny enough, I see so many players I like. I still think James Knowles has a lot to offer, and I can see Ryan Mays coming in and being a real difference maker. I really like Padraig Lynch as this new little starlet potentially emerging there. So they've got a bit of stock.
They do. I mean, Ethan McGee's a very good player. I like Corey Smith a lot. There's exciting players there. They're very young. The problem probably is the fact that they're working with, again, a very small budget. Dean is putting so much trust in young players. There's a few experienced heads in there, but they're fairly scarce in numbers. So, you know, when we're talking about the final game of the season, going, oh, they've let lots of young players out, well, you're going, as opposed to normally, when, you know, when the really old players are out and they're 21 instead of 19, that's what you're dealing with. There'll be players there, there'll be Premiership players for years to come, but I think they could do with trying to recruit a bit more experience to come in around them and help nurture those young players. It's an awful big expectation to fight it out at the bottom and managing the bigger games against the better teams when you're still finding your feet as a footballer in the top flight. It's a hard league, and there are going to be teams that find it difficult. Dungannon and Swifts have been that team.
Nobody wants to be near the bottom, but I think a team like Dungannon need to take their lessons from this year, because they'll not want to go that close to being straight out of the division once again. That takes us to our final team, and realistically the last time we'll be mentioning them as a top flight team until, well, unless they do good things next year. We go to 12 and we go to Mid-Ulster. Can Adam Sully score the goals, or any of these new players that they've brought in? Jack Evans, Jonah Mitchell, Billy Steben was signed. I think a good season is 10th. I think they would take 11th right now. I think a bad season is breaking Lismore Distillery's record of 19 points. I think that's on the cards. This is the one thing where I could be shown very wrong, but I imagine fans will be worried. For a long time, that not only looked like it was on the cards, it looked as though it was destiny. And
tell you what, that wasn't a bad shout.
It really was close. We talked about it in that podcast about how, what is with this transfer dealings? Everybody was wondering. Maybe we'll all look stupid, but consensus is this isn't good. Keith Bailey was on the podcast, 2 weeks ago, and he potentially described that summer as the worst transfer window any Irish League club has had since the invention of transfer windows. It was that bad. It took Niall Curry coming in and completely ripping it apart, and in the end, they just don't have enough runway to take off and get out of there. They lack goals. We will go to some of the questions I posed at the start of that clip. Can Adam Sally score goals? Yes, but not for Portadown. He did it for Ards. All those other players I mentioned, no. And one of the defining moments of the Paul Doolan era in Portadown will be him going on numerous interviews and complaining about the lack of strikers that he didn't sign or he didn't have. And that really was an Achilles heel. But I remember, particularly during that start of the season, and again to shout out Keith, he said something similar, where there was times a season, not only did they not look like a Premiership team, they didn't look like a good Championship team either. And credit goes to Niall Curry and creating one of the most intriguing potential survival stories we've seen ever in the Irish League. Like, it was fascinating. It felt as though Portadown was dominating this podcast week on week on week, and other people who had social media accounts, like, you know, Around the Grounds and other podcasters, were just obsessed with this mad Portadown story. It didn't work out. That was obviously something that could happen, but they dug their own, not own grave sounds a bit too harsh, but they plough their own furrow here. They planted the seeds of relegation all the way back in August, didn't they?
It would have been a great Netflix series, wouldn't it? It just felt like Sunderland Till I Die. The bonkers nature of the recruitment, the players that came in, and we were going, who are these fellas? And before we knew it, we were going, where are these fellas? Because they were gone. Change of manager. Obviously, you know, as well as that, the fallout with Adam Salley that saw him not want to come back to the club and tear it up in the Championship instead, and how they could have done with his goals for at least half of the year. Niall Curry comes in, somehow manages to get them going. Obviously, they do invest and bring in an awful lot of players, and he brings them close. He brings them into the conversation where you actually start to go, are they going to do this? Because in my mind, they were dead and buried for months. And all of a sudden, I was going, I might just need to be careful there in how I describe that, because they're putting together performances. And, you know, not lost to me in all of this, it was actually the crowd coming out in big numbers and going to watch them when they were hopeless. To me, that's incredible. How many people would just not bother? You know, I was watching the Brighton game and they were being tanked by Everton, and half their fans just cleared off.
Yeah.
Because they lost one game quite heavily. Portland fans are going, knowing that they're probably going to get stuffed, and still going for the whole game. And look, it's not the only club in the world where you can say that that's true, but I always admire those fans, because to me that's real support, isn't it? And they went and stuck by them, and I think they'll bounce right back up again. They have a big summer. As we know, not too many players were finishing the season with contracts going forward.
As was a scoop on your very own podcast,
Thank
Score.
Thank you for that. Yeah, it was interesting. You know, Niall admitted it himself, and it was something I was looking at, because everyone was going, how can they afford these players? And let's ask.
The answer is...
My job's not always that hard, you know. Like, sometimes you got a question in your head, hey, just ask it. Ask the question. And thankfully, Niall was, first of all, good enough to come on the show again, good enough to answer the question. But they've tied down some of those players. So, and I think there'll be another big recruitment drive. I don't know. I feel like they all should just go to Port Rush or something for the summer and go, hello, my name is...
Oh, yeah, big. Yeah, who are you? Where did you play for? I came here. Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think we'll look back in this season and we'll see two big case studies that could define the next 5-10 years of the league. One, Lorn, how they recruited, how they built, how they took big risks and big gambles and nailed it. And you'll look at Portadown, very different budget, very different area of the league, and how they took, let's be polite, gambles, risks, big thought ideas, and it really did not work at all. And I think we'll spend the next 2-3 years going, are these teams going down the road of Portadown? We'll see, are our teams going down the road of Lorn? We will lose one of the bigger teams, and it's somewhat poetic, I guess, And also shows you how quick football can change and how nothing is set in stone, where in the year the first team outside of Belfast in 21 years lifts the Gibson Cup, the last team who have done that, Portadown, will be playing Championship football next year. Thanks for the ride, Portadown. It's funny, I'll say this one final thing. As much as they got relegated, and it was just so grim, I imagine, to follow them, I think Portadown fans are like, you know, that was kind of a fun season. Like, for a while, that seemed really fun watching them, and it was up for the crack, really.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, the journey must have been...
Do you reckon? I don't know. It felt like it was probably death by a thousand cuts, wasn't it? It was like, what can go wrong next? Tough. Do you know, I want to say, Portadown came to the Northern Ireland Football Awards. They took their table after being relegated. Fair play. Imagine how bad you're feeling, and actually go, I'm going to sit in a room full of football people who are all going to want to talk about how their team got on and how our team got on, and they're going to come to me and talk about, well, you're relegated, hard luck, da 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 da. Imagine having to listen to that for a whole night. That's not fun. So I think that, to me, shows a bit of quality, a bit of class about the club. There's lots of things I'll reflect on that they didn't do right this year. That's why they're relegated. But fair play for fronting up and coming along, because, I mean, it would have been easier to sit at home and go, well, this year sucked, didn't it?
Who's playing Niall Curry in the Netflix adaption?
That's a good question.
Is it called Ciao?
Niall would probably tell you Brad Pitt or somebody, wouldn't he? Niall would have Bradley Cooper on the phone.
I can see, like, Christian Bale, like, deciding to make a big change. Maybe Zach Galifianakis could, like, show a serious turn and learn his Portadown accent.
See, that they were doing that with the build up to the Irish Cup final, asking the players and the managers who would be playing You, and I love Stephen Baxter's answer in that. Did you see him?
What was that?
He said, well, I was sitting opposite Jamie Dornan in a restaurant and we both seemed to sort of acknowledge one another, but we never spoke. Yeah, he was probably thinking, wonder when the biopic's coming out. I'll be on the phone to play you, Stephen. But Josh Kelly said Rupert Grint, I think just on the basis of his hair colour.
I probably will Poulter if I needed to get somebody, yeah, but I don't know. Not the non-ripped version of it, probably. I don't think you can get Owen Quigg. I don't think you can act him with me.
I can't remember the guy's name, but the TV show Reaper, when I was younger, people used to say the lead guy from Reaper, and I looked similar. So there's a bit of a retro shout for anybody that watched E4 for like that summer or however long that they actually carried the program
Reaper,
for.
Lead actor, let's go. Brett Harrison.
Brett Harrison's his name, yeah.
Brett Harrison. I
don't know whether that's a good shout. I obviously didn't say that myself, but that's what people used to say. And I went, I mean, okay, I guess. I don't know what you're meant to say when someone goes, Joe, you look like a fella. And you don't want to go like, are you blind? But it's kind of what you think,
well,
isn't it?
I'm sure you'll get a role in the commentating on the goal when Choi part two, you know, the post he delivers. But Michael, that bookends our season. Thank you so much for jumping in. Let's get a bit of promo out there. We've mentioned it a few times. The Score and I, a part of a wonderful collection of Irish League podcasts. Where can people find that so they can listen to your voice in some sort of whatever that AMRS thing is?
ASMR.
ASMR, you can do that, yeah.
That's the one.
Soothing voice.
Wherever you get your podcast from, just search for The Score and I, and you can find me and at The Score and I on Facebook, on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to follow, drop a message. We are done for the season, but there's lots of great content you can catch up on. And one of the ones that's proven very popular, in fact, is our most listened to ever episode, is my 1 hour interview with Raymond Krangle, which got a lot of referees talking, as you would imagine, when I was going to various grounds over months. People were going, you getting another ref on? You're looking more refs? So maybe we'll have more refs next year, because that seemed to do particularly well. And there was an interview in there with Stephen Baxter after his great achievement. And you know,
that was great, that one.
So there's those which I think people really like, sitting down and having an hour with a person. But part of the charm is sprinkling the guests in. You have 3 or 4 different voices on the episodes, which is also good. Maybe if there's one club you don't like as much, but people tell me all the time, I think it's really funny. My favourite, sorry I'm rambling, but there's my favourite sort of backhanded thing. People go, I didn't like him, but then I heard him on your show and he's all right. And it nearly applies to every club you could think of. It's so funny. You go, yeah, these people are all actually sound. That's why I'm choosing to talk to them.
Well, sir, they are merely the sprinkles and you are the rich, creamy gelato. You are the sweet meat and potatoes of that pod. And I'm sure many people listen to this also listen to that. Michael, been a pleasure. Let's stick the kettle on, have a second cup of tea and finish this off. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
And there we have it. First season proper of Kick and Match is somewhat in the bag. Word goes next? I'm not really sure. Best idea for you to keep in touch with everything podcast and Irish League related is via my ever so trusty social media channels. It's Kicking Match, all one word, naturally, via Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'll keep you informed with whatever I do next. Might not be a regularly scheduled podcast as I've been doing every week. Look, this is fresh waters for me too, so we'll see how it goes. I'm sure you could do with a break from me telling you that, of course, if you want to listen to this podcast or any other ones over the past months and months and months, and you want to do that hands-free, you can do that by asking your smart speaker, hey, smart speaker, please play Kicking Match, an Irish League podcast. Regardless, if this was your first time checking out the podcast or you've been here from the very beginning, thank you so much for listening this season. I have really, really appreciated it. It's been a blast. Till next time, goodbye. Cheers.